Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Motis, and I'm your host, a Filipino-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration, to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to our sponsors, TrueLearn and PicMonic. PicMonic is an excellent learning resource and study aid for occupational therapy and occupational therapy assistant students, whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam. PicMonic is the only visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams through the use of audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. How I wish I had a learning tool like this back when I was in OT school. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes or code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your PicMonic membership. Happy studying! Today, I'm super excited to introduce you to our guest of honor, Hannah Pugh. Hannah is an uncommon occupational therapist who specializes in user experience design. Hannah is the head of clinical experience at Reactive, a health tech startup that uses augmented reality to treat people with joint pain. Hannah has been an occupational therapist for 5 years and studied kinesiology at Michigan State University, then received her Master's of Occupational Therapy from the University of Pittsburgh. She has traditional OT experience working in an outpatient setting, acute and inpatient care, but through that time, she realized that she was interested in helping people through a different lens. Early in her career, she realized she could have a greater impact on people's lives by leveraging technology to reach more people. So without further ado, to tell us more about her uncommon OT work, I'd like to introduce you to Hannah Pugh. Welcome, Hannah.
Hi, I'm Hannah. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me. This is great. I'm really excited to talk a lot about myself and my career and all the things that I've done.
Yes, we're so looking forward to hear more about the uncommon OT work that you do and technology. But before we delve into all of that, as usual, I'd love for you to just tell us a little bit about your background. What drew you to this type of work?
Yeah. So I've been in OT, like you said, you know, for actually just hit 5 years. As of yesterday was my like 5 year of graduation. So yeah, 5 years now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. I've been staying 5 years for the past like couple months, but like now it's officially been 5 years. I just saw it come up on my memories of Facebook. So, so 5 years. And so kind of like early on in my OT career, I just like kind of when we started field work, and I just like kind of had this sense I would see people, like older seasoned therapists, like in the clinic or in the hospital that had been working there for, you know, like 25, 30, 40 years. And I was just like very intimidated by them because I could just never picture my career like that. I always pictured my career as like, you know, I really just saw this like, okay, I went to OT school because I want to help people. And that's like the most cliche thing that every single person says in top tier. That's like what you say. But like when you come to think of like how you're actually going to do that, it's like, it's a lot harder than you think.
Especially as an OT, right? Because we have so many options.
So I was just like really kind of overwhelmed with the options and just like wasn't super in love with any of my field works. Like I liked them. I enjoyed it. You know, obviously, like, respect all the OTs that work in those places, but I just, like, never really saw it for me. I couldn't, like, vision what my career would look like. So I started my OT career kind of in those settings because, you know, that's how you get your foot in the door, and, like, that's where OT school kind of, like, curates you to work is, you know, traditional settings. So I started working mostly in an outpatient setting and then also in acute and inpatient. And I just like, yeah, I just really felt like it wasn't for me. Like I loved the work I did, but, and I loved the people, but I just couldn't see it as like a long-term career type thing. And I just really felt that there's a way that I could help people more by like going a different route. So anyways, that's like really early in my career. So I just like had this idea. So that's just like a little bit about like my start and stuff. But yeah, just a little bit about me. I live in Chicago. I'm a big foodie and I like to go out, try all the new restaurants. There's always seems to be a new one popping up like every week. So it's hard to keep up with that. But yeah, love doing that. Now that it's kind of getting nice out, it's about to be spring/summer. I like doing that. Walks, podcast, hence why I'm here. reading, hanging out with family. That's just kind of my favorite kind of thing.
Nice. Thanks for sharing some of that. I love the foodie scene in Chicago myself. Love those hot dogs that you guys have.
The
ones that are jam-packed with everything. Oh, my gosh. I don't even know what's in it, but it's delicious.
You don't want to know, but it's like, you just know it's good. It's like, yeah, that's all you need to know.
Yeah. And I've also been connecting with a few OTs from Chicago lately. So thanks for sharing a little bit about yourself and kind of what, you know, what it was that sort of inspired you to follow a different route. So you talked about kind of just having this inkling, you know, like this is not for me. How were you able to kind of redirect that energy? Well, what did you do to kind of eventually find your path?
Yeah. Well, honestly, like it's quite difficult because, you know, when you're working in that setting, you just are like, you're surrounded by people that work in those settings. And, you know, you're just kind of like in this monotony or like in this routine of that type of workplace. And it's really hard to like give energy to other types of work or other types of OT. Cause like, you know, sometimes those can be like quite draining when you're working, you know, with people all day long. So, yeah, so for me, it was like, I kind of got to this point where I was like, it was like right before COVID. So that was kind of it. And I was just like, what? I knew I had these skills that I knew were usable somewhere, but I just like got to this point, like almost mentally where I was like, I need to figure out what I want because I don't want this. And I know that I can do something else. But like, it was like almost like I didn't have like a true breaking point of like, I need to get out like tomorrow, but it was just kind of this feeling of going to work and being like, I don't feel 100% here. Like, I just don't feel like I'm giving myself like 100% of myself. And that's not my personality. I'm like a very much like, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it 100%. And that's kind of, I guess maybe that was like the light bulb was like, I started going to work and I was getting like 90% and then like 80%. And then like, I just like didn't fit well with me. I'm like, who is this person and like, who am I showing up for if I'm like not showing up 100% of like my effort in my health and like for myself. And like, I feel like that kind of got to me. And then that was like kind of my cue of like, okay, now it's time to make a switch. And now it's time to not even make a switch, but like do something about it. Like, let's not just sit here and like go to work and like, you know, like gripe about it or like, you know, have these feelings of it's like not for me, let's like action, like let's figure out how we can change this. So I got to that point, it was like probably like early 2020. And again, of course, that like coincided with COVID. And so a little bit before that, I guess I was like already trying to like, it was doing like basic Google searches, like trying to figure out like literally Googling like what can OTs do, like outside of healthcare. And like, that's kind of how I got the ball rolling. I started looking into things. I really started looking into UX design. And just kind of as like, what is this? And like, I could see the correlation between it, but like, I didn't know what anything was. So actually before COVID and before that happened, I took like a brief, like 2-hour course at the campus in Chicago. It's called General Assembly. And it was just like an intro course of like, what is UX design?
Can you tell us a little bit about what that is, just in case our listeners are not familiar?
So UX design is called user experience design, and abbreviated UX design. And so there's the design piece and research piece. And basically what it is designing a user experience. So anything that you do, so anything that you interact with, like any products that you use, or it could be like an actual physical, like, experience that you have. And it's the process around it of designing that process for an end user. So for a specific type of person, or specific group, or you're designing it with these like people in mind, hypothetical or real kind of people, the people that you maybe expect to use your product or like use the experience. Or it could be like for a real life situation of like, how can we improve the user experience of like the wait time at Disney or something, like something as broad as that. Or it could be like, mm-hmm. how can we improve the user experience of like, how do these people interact with our app, like our product, or how are these people going to use the new coffee machine or something? So it's very applicable. It's like this framework that you can apply to all of these different situations. And in that framework, it's this design process framework. So it's like you have a problem that's presented to you, you have hypotheses, you test these hypotheses, you design something, you iterate, or you kind of like go back and forth on that, you test it, and then you kind of like redesign. It's this like iterative process of design. So it actually parallels very well with the OT framework. And if you think about kind of the things that I've just kind of explained, it's like you are solving the problem for your end user. And in that case, your end user is your patient. And every patient case is different. So even if you've done this a million times before, when we're designing treatment plans, we have to iterate back and forth, because even though you may think that, you know, this type of process is going to work, or these exercises or this recommendation, this adaptation is going to work for this person, because it worked for someone else before, like that might not be the case. And like as therapists, we're kind of like innate in thinking of that. And like, we're really good at being able to do that like iterative process of like, you know, we have those like kind of built-in checkpoints of like, we get to the, like you write the eval and then you have like your plan of care and then the re-eval and like the reassessment.
Yes.
And once you get to that reassessment, you're going back and you're like, okay, did this work? Why didn't this work? How can we change this? How can we get better to get this outcome? So yeah, the process kind of like from a high level view, the processes really kind of near each other, but obviously have different applications. And then the steps are obviously a little bit different, but yeah, I kind of picked up on those similarities pretty early on. When I first took that like intro course, I was like, this is exactly, not exactly, but I was like, this is exactly like OT. Like, that's kind of how my brain works anyway. So like, why can't I apply that to other things? So,
I love that. Yeah. I, you know, just when you initially began to explain the work that you did and identifying the problem and trying out different solutions and making adjustments as needed. I mean, that's exactly the same as, again, working on a problem, setting goals, right? And then setting goals that are realistic and then perhaps making adjustments towards those goals because of, you know, whatever may be happening at the time. So I love that, you know, you took this course, a light bulb went off and you were like, whoa, okay, these are the parallels with, you know, the framework that I have in my brain, the framework that I was just trained to, you know, to sort of apply, right? So how did you then put them together?
Yeah. So I took that like short course, and then like right when COVID hit, like things were kind of all up in arms, obviously, in the clinic that I was working at. I worked mostly outpatients, we closed, and, you know, much like I'm probably preaching to the choir of just like how their lives were disrupted, work lives and personal lives, obviously, in 2020. And so for that, like, I had a lot more free time, obviously, like all the social stuff was just off the table, but my work hours shifted a lot. I was working more like on a PRN type basis. So I was kind of like, I was working like D shifts in the hospital. So I was working like 2 to 11 or 3 to 11, whatever time it was. So I like had more free time and flexibility in my schedule that was like unheard of. I had never had that type of flexibility or freedom before.
Because you were working 9 to 5 at the hospital.
Yeah. I worked 10. So I was working 7 to 5, and then I worked PRN on the weekend. So I was anyways, so yeah, then I was like, you know, I think that now's the time. Like, now's the time to take this course. The course was all switched to remote, which actually helped me out a lot, because the course was like at a time that it was like hard for me to make going in person, like making sure I could finish at the clinic in time to get to the class. So I was like, I think I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to put in the effort. Like, why not now? Like, use my time, use this uncertainty to like learn something new and like kind of go for it. So I took the course summer of 2020. It was like about May to July, maybe May to August, maybe I forget if it was 10 or 12 weeks or maybe 14 weeks. I can't remember. But so in that course, I learned like the foundations of it. I took the, for the listeners, I took the part-time General Assembly course. General Assembly is like the school, and then it was a part-time UX course. There's different like types of courses. You can take like an immersive course, which is full-time, but that's like you can't work at all. It is your job. It's a lot more money, but you get like a lot more support and like mentorship with it. But this one was part-time, so I did it. I still was working, like I said, full-time, but like kind of those wonky hours and stuff. And so after I finished it, I had like one kind of portfolio piece, is what they call it. So I was working on one project throughout the course. And the project that I was working on was like a hypothetical project. But basically what it was is I built like a adaptive equipment DME like catalog for inpatient rehab. So like my kind of thought around that was like the problem at that time was that people working in inpatient, like specifically inpatient, patients couldn't have, they didn't have access to like their home setup. So like my idea of an app or product at that time was to like connect them with their home or their caregiver at home. And then so that they could like measure to order the correct like shower chair or their correct like bathroom DME and stuff. And then I had it like to build the whole like catalog of stuff and whatever, but it was all hypothetical. I think in theory it would be, I actually think that's a good idea. So
I think so too.
Yeah. I still have the mock-ups of it, but anyway, so that really just like taught me the framework of like what would go into building a product. And like we did like interviews for it. So I interviewed, you know, people working in inpatient and also caregivers and just kind of stuff like that. So we really just kind of like got to understand the process of it. But after the course, so you have one project. So that's kind of your only experience, but you need like a lot more experience than just that to kind of make a full transition or to get a job. So after the course, I took like a break, like a month break or something, because it was just, it was kind of exhausting, honestly, to, you know, working full time and then also doing that. But after that, I actually had a friend who worked as a UX consultant, and I kind of partnered up with her and just kind of presented myself like, hey, I finished this course. I kind of know the basics, but like, I know you are, she worked as a UX consultant full time. And I was like, do you have any projects I can like come under your wing on, like help you with like any part of the project? And she was like, actually, yeah, I'm working on this, this app for, this company. Like, would you want help? And I was like, sure. So I started doing things like that. And that kind of like got the network rolling. And like, once I did one thing, like, you know, you just kind of like meet someone else kind of you can talk to. So that's kind of how I got my foot in the door a little bit. Okay. And then, so those are a lot on the, like more on the business side. I was doing like business finance type app, and I was just like really not interested at all, honestly, like in that type of industry. Like I wanted to still stay in healthcare. And so then I started doing some outreach to other like nonprofits or startups that were in the kind of the health tech or, you know, digital health world. And I started doing more UX audits. So basically I was like taking existing apps or websites and kind of going through them and using what's called the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines and WCAG. And basically going through that, which is similar to ADA guidelines in the physical space. The Web Content Accessibility Guidelines are a similar type of framework, but in the digital space. And so I would go through that, go through a website or an app and kind of pick things out that would work or wouldn't work for different populations and kind of give the reasons why. So, you know, like text placement is really important for like screen readers or like alt text, or even like color contrast is really important for obviously people with like low vision. And just like even the way that things were laid out and stuff, just about like just making things more accessible for people. So that's kind of what I was doing for just kind of on the side and just kind of as a learning experience, which I think was really helpful and just kind of like not only like the tactical experience that it gave me, but it also gave me the experience of like talking to people outside of the industry. am really seeing like, okay, yes, I am an OT. Yes, I work clinically, but also like, I know that things that you don't know. Like, you're not going to think of like the person with low vision when you're looking at this, but like, that's something that like, comes up pretty easily for me to like think about or like at least have that frame of reference that like these other people don't have. And that's something that's like, that's really valuable.
Yeah. And particularly in the experiential part of things, right? I mean, you're when it comes to a website, the experience would be readability or whether it's audio or actual text, right? And being able to, you know, see the size of the font and everything has to be sort of, well, I don't know. Maybe you can tell me, what are we looking at when it comes to websites? What are you kind of, I know that you sort of probably have a, like sort of checkpoints, but are there some, I don't know, sort of quick tips that you can give us to make our websites a little bit more accessible?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is honestly like color contrast, or like that's something that like there's this website, I have to find exactly what it's called, but like you can plug in the colors that you use and see the color contrast ratio. And according to the web content accessibility guidelines, there is different ratios that you have to meet. So there's like three tiers. So there's like the minimum, bare minimum that you have to meet. Then there's like this like, oh, it's pretty good, but like could be better. And then there's like the okay, great, like exceeds expectations. And you should obviously always strive for that like top tier, but like they don't really make everything in the digital space as accessible as like things in the physical space have to be, because it's just not as well regulated. And they're not like, there's no one really out there being like, you need to shut down your website because these people can't read it kind of thing. Versus like in the physical space, there's a lot more regulations around that stuff. So so that's like the easiest thing for me to kind of just pick out and like give people, because that's such an easy fix for people to do. And it's like easy for everyone, even if you have no design experience, you don't even know anything about like creating a website, but like that's something that even if you're like creating content on like Instagram or like using Canva or social media and all that stuff, like that's something that you can just like kind of plug in and kind of see what it is and just like adjust that. But there's obviously a lot more like stuff about layout and stuff, but I think that that's like the easiest thing that you can kind of learn and like use, because that's good for any digital content, not even just like websites.
Yes, that's a great tip. Thanks for that, and we'll definitely include your in our resources or in our show notes some of the resources that you've mentioned, like particularly this you know, site where you can plug in your colors and it'll basically kind of let you know whether you're meeting the basic criteria or not, right? And I think as therapists, we're we're very concerned, right? Or we're very, at least for me, I should just speak for myself probably, but you know, I'm very concerned that everyone can read what I have on my website. That's really kind of the point, right? And again, as an OT particularly, I would cringe at the fact that, you know, a client was not able to read or just sort of access the information that I had there for them for whatever reason, right? For a reason that I didn't even recognize. So I really appreciate that service that you're providing. So how did you do that on a consulting basis? And is that something that you still do?
It's not something I still do. Mostly just a time thing. And like that, I did that when I was working clinically. So it's really good, like brain shift kind of thing. Cause you know, I was working on my, you know, in the clinic all day. And then I would like go do that like at night or like on the weekend. It was a good kind of brain shift because it was like a different type of work. And I didn't do a lot of computer work during the day. I obviously like did notes and stuff, but you're obviously not on the computer like as you are working non-clinically. So now since I work kind of in that space, I don't do that specifically anymore. But maybe I should pick it back up. Like, I think it was a good service and like a few things to do, but but I was doing it like on a consult basis, not anything super formal. I was just kind of reaching out to different apps that I would see, or like I said, other nonprofits or startups or something, and just kind of reach out and say like, hey, I'm an OT, like I can provide this service, like are you interested? And I did like a few that way. now, which is,
I
like I said,
definitely want
good
to
experience.
connect you with a nonprofit that I'm connected with, just because I know they're very concerned about the information being accessible to, because it's one way you sort of give your website to someone, right? Or to a group or to a doctor's office, in hopes that their clients would then contact you. And if they were to contact you and couldn't understand anything that was going on in your website, I mean, how shameful. Especially from OT, coming from an OT perspective, right? So
I know.
I
And it's
think
something, it's something that like OT is like we're all like aware of that we want people to be able to use it, but I think it's harder than like we don't know how to think about it in terms of like digital space. Like we know how to think about it. We're taught how to think about it in terms of physical space. But we're not taught how to think about it in terms of digital space. And when someone who's like able-bodied, able-mind is like going through a website and they don't get how it works, they just exit out of it and they're like, nah, whatever, I'll do something else. They're like, I'll use a different app or like,
yes.
but there's some cases where, you don't have the option or the luxury to be able to do that. Like you have to actually get someone else to come in and help you. So, yeah.
Yeah. I've had experiences working with clients in terms of really helping them feel more comfortable with the use of technology, right? Not even necessarily accessibility. And I've had to make adjustments to one's phone, for example, right? Or one's computer, just so that the color contrast is a bit more effective for them, or the font size. And then, I'd get these sort of like, oh my gosh, you made it much bigger. Like, that's wonderful, right? So, and this is on a very, very basic level. What you're offering is not necessarily just, necessarily just helping the clients. Yes, that's the obvious, but I think you're going to be shifting brains. You're going to be shifting the perspectives, even for OTs, right? Just in terms of how they look at their content and how one is receiving that content.
Totally. And I think we're really good at doing it like in a clinic and being like, okay, this person needs help accessing their phone and we can go in like the things you mentioned, but like we don't think about it in terms of like accessibility is for everyone and like like making things accessible for everyone from the get-go is a lot harder. Now it's easy to make these adaptations to one's personal devices and stuff, but it's kind of like on a global scale. And that's kind of like the whole thing I was talking about, like how just making an impact on like a bigger scale versus on these like one-to-one like use case type basis.
Yes. Wow. So super interesting stuff, really. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about practicalities, right? Because it's great that you're able to, find this new role, right? Networking, it sounds like, is a great way to kind of get your foot in the door. You mentioned sort of having an elevator pitch, so to speak, right? Because you're speaking to non-OTs. Would you mind sharing with us, what do you, is there something that you typically say, or is there a way that you typically introduce your service or what you can offer?
Yeah, so I think it's changed a bit over the past year or so. Like I think it was a lot different when I was kind of like pitching those types of like consulting type gigs versus now like when I explain like what I do now for my current work, which yeah, so I think it depends on your audience a little bit and it depends on like what are we trying to get across and like who are we trying to convince and what are we trying to convince them of. Yeah, so I think in those situations for me, it was more like really kind of bridging the gap between like what an OT does on like a very high level view. What do? We in that case, I was like pitching like we can make things more accessible and we can help more people, which like in turn that will get more traffic to your website, more traffic to your app. If there's these people that can't use it, then like you're missing out on X percent of the population that's not even going to get to the point that they can use that product. So that's kind of like how that pitch is. Versus like what I do now, which I can go ahead and explain it. I don't think I even fully explained like what I do. But so now I work as the head of clinical experience for a startup called Reactive. And kind of what we've built is a digital platform, so an app for people with chronic pain, chronic joint pain, arthritis type patients. And we use computer vision and gaming to match like rehab exercises to motions. And so in my role in this, we treat patients through the app. So I treat some patients that come through the app, but more as this like high level view of how are these people interacting with the product and kind of taking that and relaying that information to the product side. Like, okay, what needs to be fixed? What needs to be enhanced? What are these people getting and what are these people not getting? And kind of also relating that towards the business side. So it's more like this, the user experience of the patients, but also like how it affects products. But then I also do a little bit of like clinical side of it. So it's kind of very multi faceted.
Yeah, it sounds like you're kind of like a liaison between the user and the people who create the product, and you're communicating each other's needs to each other.
Yeah.
Right. And then making sure that the product that's produced really meets the needs of the consumer of that product.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Amazing. So I'm dying to know what a typical day is like. So you mentioned that you're treating patients on the app. So these are folks with pain related issues who are on their phones and have downloaded this app, right? And then they're on the app kind of trying, I don't know, a home exercise program, maybe, or I don't know, a breathing exercise. I don't know. I hope you have mindfulness stuff on there. And then what happens?
Yeah. So actually, so I'll give a bit of a back story because I think it'll help frame the context a little bit. So we were, when we first kind of launched the product, we were doing more hand therapy, and we were working a lot with like hand surgery. So it was a lot for like wrist fracture patients, actually. Anyways, so, but we built these games within the app to all help with movement. So it's all like movement-based upper extremity. We're working on building the other parts of the body. But anyways, so when a patient comes into the app, most of the time they have, right now we're focused a lot on joint pain, so arthritis type patients. And so they come in the app, they download it. They can either do kind of like an asynchronous type of route where they can just like play the games, which is one route, and or they can like also connect with the therapist. So then they'll connect like via chat, via video call, like a telehealth consult, and then kind of keep the line of communication via chat versus like having to meet face to face all the time. We still meet face to face, but like it's kind of like, you know, these patients can just send a message when they have an issue or when they have a question, and that's kind of the first line of communication rather than the video call.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So I was going to say the typical day is like, it really depends on one, how many patients I'm seeing, which is for me, I think max a day is usually about like four video calls, I would say, in a given day, which are usually about 30-ish to 60 minutes. And then also some of that asynchronous communication, like I said, like via the chat, stuff like that. But then there's this whole other piece of stuff that I will do. So it's in like taking what they're saying, what they're doing, kind of relaying that information to the rest of the team. We're also working a lot on like clinical stuff. So like getting a clinical trial, working on like the credentialing side, the Medicare member side, all this other kind of stuff. I also work on the social media that we produce. So making, posting, commenting on that stuff. And then just kind of like, you know, making sure that all the patients that are within the app or that are either treated by me or the other therapists in the app that are like, you know, everything's kind of going smoothly. There's not any like problems via the patients or from other therapists, like kind of running that and like triaging all that stuff and packaging it.
Yes. How fascinating. So that sounds like a really interesting day. Can you talk us through maybe a typical, in a typical session?
Yeah. So it's very, it's different. And like treating patients virtually, I'm sure a lot of people listening have maybe treated patients virtually, like in COVID, but probably have stopped now. A lot of it, like, oh, I mean, some of it's still going, but it's definitely not as widespread as it was, like, you know, 2 years ago. But so since we treat patients only virtually, it's the key, especially this type of patient population, the key is gaining trust, like rapport and empathy, like right off the bat, because these are patients who oftentimes have, you know, like tried the traditional medical model, have maybe have done outpatient OT, PT, and like usually they didn't have a great experience. And a lot of that is like, you know, insurance dictated, or like they just were rushed kind of through the sessions, or, you know, they couldn't get to the session. So they like went once every 3 weeks and like weren't really consistent with their HEP and all that stuff. So, so the sessions look a lot different because we're like, it's really a one-to-one basis, and we're really like trying to know like, who are these people and like, what do they need help with? Like,
yes,
I don't care that they have 10 degrees or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not super nitpicky on like the range of motion that they have. I'm like, how can that affect their function? And like, what can I do? Can I teach them other exercises? Can I get them to do the exercises more via the games that we have? Do I need to recommend a certain splint for them? Maybe K-tape, maybe something like that. Or should we talk about like how they're doing it? And like, do we need to adapt it? And like, do they need to walk into their kitchen and show me how they're making a cup of coffee and what, when it exactly is bothering them that I can watch and do it in real time?
Yeah. So in this assessment process that you're mentioning, when does this take place? So, you know, I guess maybe we should take a couple of steps back. And how do people find the app? Is this something that's referred? How are they referred to the app?
Yeah. So it's actually a couple different ways. So we have physician referrals. So you can be referred by your hand doctor, hand surgeon, or you could be referred by like ortho doc, or we even have some like primary care doctors.
Okay.
So could be referred that way. You could be referred from, on like a consultation prevention basis and see us from, or not referred, but like find us on social media, find us on the internet, find us through, any sort of social media or website.
Okay. And when they find you, what happens?
So when they find us, they download the app. So they download it, and then once you download the app, it asks you a series of questions. It asks you name, what condition you have, if any, what body part. It asks you, it goes through the quick dash. So we have that baseline.
So that's pain. Basically like the assessment portion. Yes. It's all done kind of digitally, and the person inputs all of that information. Okay, got it.
Yeah, so a lot of that's all collected. And then on the video session is when we'll do like, or I'll do like more of the formal visual assessment. So like, can you show me what your hand looks like? Can you show me if you can make these motions? Can you show me when it hurts? Can you tell me just a little bit more about when did it start? All the things that you've tried, what works, what doesn't work, all, you know, just the traditional questions and stuff that you ask anyone. So, yeah. So that's kind of like.
And does each, I guess, assessment always come with a video call or a video assessment?
Yes, mostly. but you can like just download the app and play it and then never talk to us. But then that's like, it's very different, because then you would never, like, you don't have the recommendations from us. We don't really know like what's going on if you're not inputting it. So,
Whether they're using it properly, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm just imagining everyone holds and has so many different types of phones and holds their phones in so many different ways, right? And I'm just thinking proper body mechanics already, right? Or just kind of ergonomics. So very interesting. Okay. So now you've done your assessment, or maybe not, right? But the ones that you have done the assessment with, you at least have this opportunity to go over with them your recommendations.
Right. So some of them, I'll just want to phrase this a little bit differently, I guess, but like, yeah, so some of them we don't do a full assessment with. It's just like a consultation. And that's more for like a licensing thing. And like, that's more of a state by state kind of basis. So it does kind of depend on that. And like, I'm licensed in like, I don't know, maybe about 10 states now or something. So I can see like a lot of different patients and stuff, but there's mm-hmm. some that we can only see on a like preventative basis. And those yes. patients, like, I don't do a full like assessment like I would obviously in an outpatient clinic when you mm-hmm. have the referral. It's more like, okay, this person's coming in with like hand arthritis. How can I teach them what arthritis is and like just general joint protection principles and like mm-hmm. how those are applied? So yeah, it's a little bit different and it's a little bit on a case by case basis, a bit nuanced a little bit because of just those technicalities of yes. our licensing and across the states and stuff. But yeah, I just wanted to mention some of those okay. like little nuances a little bit.
Yeah, that's so important. Maybe we can mm-hmm. segue a little bit into, money matters, right? Is there a fee or is there a cost to downloading the app? And I guess how are you compensated for the work that you're doing?
Yeah. So right now, since I work for a startup, we're all like investor backed, and that's how we have our money right now. We're trying to, like I said, we're like exploring the clinical trials and stuff like that. So we're really kind of pursuing getting in network with payers. That's kind of what we're working on right now. So right now for patients, it's actually complimentary. We're running like a promo for them to try to get in the app. And that's because we're using all of that, the data to kind of like prove outcomes and prove mm-hmm. outcome measures. And yeah, so at this current moment when we're recording this, it's actually free for patients, but that's not going to be the case for much longer. Like probably okay. I'm talking like weeks. It's going to change, and that's going to depending on our subscription model and then also payer contracts. So we're, like I said, we're pursuing like Medicare contracts and then also commercial payment plans. So I think what's going to happen is it's going to be a bit of a hybrid, but kind of changing every day of kind of like what we're thinking and kind of what's going to actually happen. Okay. So so
I just have like a gazillion questions just in terms of you know, when you mentioned Medicare. So you're billing Medicare for these sessions, mm-hmm. basically, mm-hmm. right? So what code are you using to bill Medicare for these sessions? Because they're technically, and these are the virtual sessions, not just the use of the app, right? They're okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's actually, explain. We're currently not billing Medicare right now, but we're pursuing the payment contract with Medicare.
Okay.
But at that time, we would be the virtual session. Okay. So those virtual sessions. But other than that, there are those RTM codes. They're called remote therapeutic monitoring codes, which came mm-hmm. into effect this year through CMS. And you can bill those codes. And those are those, like, those can be billed asynchronously. So there's, like, a setup code for, like, you set up a patient on the technology. There's a monitoring code for like monitoring patient progress. And then there's like the follow-up code. So there's like three different RTM codes that you can use mm-hmm. For that asynchronous stuff. So a lot of that stuff is already being done this year by like MedBridge, ATP2Go. Those are already like CMS compliant type of sites, which actually a lot of people, you know, you're already using it, but it's just mm-hmm. a matter of like billing those correct codes. Yeah, so those are the RTM codes. So hopefully we'll be able to use those. In theory, we're able to use them, but we just haven't done it yet.
Haven't,
you know how like finicky, like yeah. So but yeah, we're able to use those codes. We just haven't built it yet.
Okay, so great. Now when the app becomes available to, well, it is available to everyone, but once mm-hmm. you start to charge for it, what will the cost be? Do you know that?
Yeah.
So and how do you determine such a thing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's funny you mention it because we were actually having that conversation earlier today. So I think the answer is TBD. We're trying to do a lot of contracts, but then like get a network with insurance. But I think a lot of it will also be, you have the option to pay out of pocket. There will be some sort of like pay out of pocket method. And mm-hmm. I think what it will be is like a subscription fee. So I don't know the exact numbers. I don't want to really throw one out. So X dollars a month and then X dollars for the live session. So the one-to-one like virtual sessions would okay. be another fixed cost. So it'd be like
a la carte, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So if you were, you know, fine just like doing the games or just like staying asynchronous, then you can do it that way. But if you want those one-to-one sessions, then there would be another cost. It's how we're thinking about it. But again, that's not like set in stone. So
yeah, that makes sense. Because you know how there's these apps where there's the free version and you can only access so much. And then if you pay a little extra, then you get all that other stuff. So I love it. Exactly. Thanks for, you know, breaking that down for me. for our listeners. Because I just kind of needed to conceptualize like what a session is like, how do you get paid for these sessions, and is there sort of a typical length of time that you work with clients? Do you ever discharge them, you know, or is this something I would imagine you want them to kind of keep the subscription and kind of keep using the service, right? And also when it comes to, I guess, joint or movement related things, this is something that it's more of like a routine building app on the side, right? Because it gets people to actually incorporate these exercises into their day.
Yeah. So we want people to use it a lot, especially if they are the appropriate patient and the appropriate patient diagnosis. Use it a lot and use it for weeks. The longest I've treated a patient so far has been like 6 months. But we haven't been treating patients for much longer than that. So they've been in basically since the beginning. And the way it kind of works is like, at first we were meeting like kind of once a week, and then we started meeting like twice a month, and then like once a month. And that's kind of the frequency that we've been at now.
Okay.
And then we kind of communicate the rest via the chat. So there's also other patients that I have like discharged, but more so in the sense that like, I don't feel like we need to meet face to face, but like you're still able to, if you want to, if you need that. But, like I personally just don't feel like they need to meet them. It's more of like a mutual agreement of like what benefits they need. But we also do, and we have treated patients like directly from the physician referral, which those we do follow like the medical model of like, you know, you have the referral, you have the visits, you have the plan of care, and then we do actually discharge those, which are like signed plan of cares from the physician. So those are a little bit different because those patients are truly like discharged.
Yes.
They can still use the app technically, but like we don't like kick them off, but like I just don't reach out to them, and then they get it. They can still do the exercises that are within the app, but that's more just like as an HEP thing, but it's not like a that they really need to continue doing it, because at that point they're like rehab.
It's more like patient education, right? Just telling, you know, teaching them, okay, these are the best ways to move your joints. These are, you should probably do these stretches once a day. And then, you know, the rest is just kind of maintenance, right? So the folks that you have sort of on your maintenance plans are the ones that you're continuing to see once a month. And that sounds like it's more like a, kind of like accountability and just keeping up with stuff. Okay.
Yeah. Because definitely at first when you see them, there's like, especially people who are newly diagnosed with like osteo or rheumatoid arthritis, or actually any type of arthritis really, but there's a lot of education that goes into it right at the beginning. And a lot of that's just because there's a really like a negative stigma kind of around arthritis. And there's like these, a lot of these words, like buzzwords that physicians like to use, or other healthcare professionals, like bone on bone, or like an old people disease. They're just kind of like stuff like that.
Yes.
That when younger people get diagnosed with it, they have that already, that social construct of it, like in their mind. And it's like, it's really the education of like breaking that down. What does that mean? And like, how is that going to affect your life? And like, how can we manage all these things that are being told to, and like break them down of like the truth and the legitimacy to each one of those, and like what that means for like your day to day.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's like, that's really great. And, you know, I guess it just got me thinking about, you know, I know we talked about the games, and they're, pretty biomechanical in my mind, just in terms of one pressing buttons and, I don't know, is it kind of like, brain games with maybe Tetris and moving things around, stuff like that. Do you ever incorporate other things I mentioned earlier, mindfulness? So are there pieces of that within the app too? And, you know, kind of like energy conservation, like things that we know, also matter when it comes to mm-hmm. arthritis, right?
Yeah, totally. So actually all the games are used by computer vision technology. So it's like you hold your hand away from the phone. So the phone would be like about an arm's distance away. And then you're using your hand in different motions, and the phone camera is detecting your hand movement. And then it's tracking that. And then you're using your hand basically as a control. So you're not like tapping any buttons, and it's not like a traditional game like that. But actually, funny that you mentioned Tetris. There is like a Tetris type game which uses like finger opposition and different pinches.
Uh-huh.
And so you're like picking and placing different pieces kind of based on that. And then we have a game that's like opening and closing your hand and uses mm-hmm. forearms, supination and pronation. Mm-hmm. And then the other game is more of a wrist flexion extension and radial and ulnar deviation. But you're doing all those motions to control the game. So you're like sitting about, you know, like an arm's length away, kind of doing it on your phone, but not like tapping on your phone. So it's quite different than like a traditional type game in that sense. In terms of like the energy conservation, the joint protection, all that other piece, that all comes from the therapist. So that's all stuff that's like, you know, like would be driven by me or other therapists, mm-hmm. like of education that's like either delivered via the chat message or like in a one-to-one session. That's usually what we talk about a lot in the sessions, or like the patients that I've treated, that's like what I talk to them about a lot. It's like, you know, first of all, it's like teaching them why their joints hurt. And that's like a really big mm-hmm. thing. It's like understanding why, and then kind of like going through that and being like, okay, now you know why, but like, what can we do about it? And these are the things that you can do about it. One of them is movement in most cases. Mm-hmm. And then kind of going from there and like timing that with like time of day and like recommending that, like when and like, what do I pair it with? Do I need to pair it with modality? Is it ice? Mm-hmm. Is it heat? Is it, and then it's like, okay, great. But like, how do I use that? How am I still going to be able to, you know, cook dinner, you know? And then mm-hmm. it's kind of going into those types of things. So I kind of see it in these like different phases of like the education, the like anatomy, the reason why, and then it's like, okay, what can we do? And then it's like, how do we do it? So that's kind of like,
yes,
the framework.
So unless they worked with a therapist one-on-one or through the video chat, they wouldn't necessarily have this information, right? Like, is it available for them to read maybe somewhere, like joint protection techniques and general principles?
Yeah, we do a lot of that on our social media, actually. We've talked about integrating it, like, into the app, but we're, like, right now our focus is more on, like, just getting people in, like,
yes,
kind of, that's not really our focus right now, but we've talked a lot about that, like, the future of what the app's going to look like and where all that information's going to live. Mm-hmm. So I produce a lot of that content, and I put it on our social media as, like, tips. I do a lot of, like, the joint protection stuff, a lot of, like, the reason why, you know, like that, like the anatomy or just like kind of what's going on internally.
Yeah.
And then
even diet, right? And nutrition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah, I touch a lot of that like on social media, and like I'll direct people to that. I'll be like, oh, look at this video, or like, or in the chat, we can also send like hyperlinks to other resources and stuff. So yeah, we have like our own guides of things that we can send out and stuff like that.
Well, I love that you have the OT lens they're representing, because again, you're able to sort of identify where these issues are, right? And kind of what you mm-hmm. need or how you need to offer something in an effective way, right? You have to have this sort of like keen eye for that. Ah, thank you so much for all this information. Any career advice for any of our followers or listeners who are interested in moving into this aspect of, you know, because I look at this under the umbrella of technology, right? But I think it's a little bit, it's more than that. It's really having the person, it's really, really, you're interested in how the person is utilizing that technology and whether that experience is effective or not, right?
Yeah, that's a really good way to explain it. I think my biggest career advice is networking. And I know that gets like everyone who hears that, they're like, networking. I hear that all the time, but like how and what? And like, it's just like this buzzword and, you know, no, but like truly to be, to kind of find your people. And like, that's what I like to call it. It's like, you know, you have to find your people that are like similar. And like, I think that like listening to this podcast, I'm sure a lot of people are kind of in this similar kind of mindset of like interested mm-hmm. in something else. And maybe it's not the exact same, like type of path you're interested in, but like, yeah, just like not being afraid to reach out to people that you see. Another thing that's really not big for OTs is LinkedIn. Like that was something yes. that I was like, nah, man, OTs don't need LinkedIn. Like that's for business people. Like I don't need that. And
I didn't spruce up my LinkedIn until I started looking for work. Right. So it's one of those exactly. things where you feel like you spruce it up when you need to start mm-hmm. really looking for something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But what I've learned is that it's a great way for people to find you. Right. Mm-hmm. And just to really kind of, you know, I found that my LinkedIn was so outdated and it probably is again. But you know, it's also, I think, getting into the habit of going in there and updating it regularly because people are looking, right? And who knows, you know, you want them to have the most up-to-date information on you. And, you know, for some of us who've been practicing for a long time, we kind of shift focuses sometimes on, you know, what we're doing. So it's a great way to kind of highlight what you're currently focusing on.
Totally. Yeah. And it's not even like obviously all that stuff is great, like updating your profile, making sure it's up to date, but it's like really just like using it to like quote unquote like creep on people and like see what other people are doing and like using that to like yeah. get inspired, because you know the OT world is very small, the like mm-hmm. rehab world is very small, and like feel like once you start kind of connecting in those spaces you kind of realize that. But there's a lot of people doing really cool things, and there's a lot of people that aren't in rehab that are doing really cool things yeah. too, but it's like, you know, just not being afraid to reach out and just like even sending a message, reaching out to connect to them on LinkedIn and just like ask them, or just say, you know, like you work for a company that I'm really interested in, like you have 15 minutes to talk about like your experience or like, mm-hmm. and those chats go a long way. I would say that's something that I was terrified of. Like I generally do not like reaching out to people. I get really like shy and nervous in like situations where I don't know people, and like that's just not in my personality wheelhouse typically. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, like everyone that I reached out to, I would say like 90% of people were like super nice and like willing to either like chat, and if they weren't willing to have a chat, or like, you know, obviously people have time constrictions and whatever, but
nobody's ever yeah. rude, right? I mean, they may yeah, not yeah, have the exactly, time, yeah. but nobody's ever right. rude to you. So yeah. I
in
agree.
My head, I was like, oh my gosh, no one's going to respond to me. They're going to be like, why is this person messaging me? But like, yeah, like I said, 9 times out of 10, they would either respond with something very nice directly to someone who could, or they would be willing to get on the call. But yeah, no one was ever rude. Everyone was really nice. And yeah, I think that's something that's like really undervalued. And like, it's good to just get, like I said, like get people in your corner and just kind of like realizing, even just speaking like what you want and like, telling people and like just listening to their experience. I think that's really valuable. And like, it goes a long way with like making connections and like kind of figuring out, like if you're in that point where you're trying to figure out like, which direction do I want to go? Like that's something that's really good to just like, you know, kind of make those connections and talk to people and see how they kind of.
Yeah.
You know, ask them a question or whatever, you know?
I completely agree. I like that you're kind of, you know, rather than thinking of it as networking, right, which can seem mm-hmm. really daunting, we can look at it as just reaching out, right, which seems like a yeah. much simpler, kind of less strategic step, right? You're just reaching out. You're just saying hi. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I just want to introduce myself to you. And I believe mm-hmm. in the power of that 1000%. That's how mm-hmm. I've met most of my podcast guests. I've just kind of reached out to them. That's how you and I mm-hmm. met, right? Mm-hmm. You just connected. Mm-hmm. And then these conversations, these relationships then lead to so many
yeah,
other
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's almost yeah. magical, I feel. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's very kind of humbling because OTs are very helpful to each other and really very supportive. And particularly in this, you know, in this OT world of mine, of, you know, sort of the uncommon OT world and sort of creating and building this community and all, you know, sort of community members like you finding each other, right? And feeling really good about, you know, being a part of this community. So, I absolutely love that. It did not feel, aside from kind of that daunting, oh gosh, okay, I'm just going to do it. As soon as I crossed that bridge, it was smooth sailing. Cause again, people would reach back out and, you know, I really felt the love and the support. So great, great advice. Are there any common myths or misconceptions about the uncommon OT work that you do that you'd like to demystify today?
Yeah, I think my biggest thing is like, not necessarily about the work I do, but just kind of in general about like non-traditional OT roles or just like uncommon OT roles. And it's like, you don't need to know it all. You really don't need to know it all. And like when you're looking at roles and when you're looking at applying, you're thinking about how you're getting there, but you maybe don't have all the skills. A willingness to learn really goes a long way. So you don't need to know it all, but you just need to be willing to learn and you need to be willing to like be bad at something, you know, like willing to like, just a willingness to like try, I think really just goes a long way. And I think that's something that maybe if it's preventing people from kind of crossing the bridge or maybe it's preventing people from like exploring. But yeah, I would just say like, you don't need to know it all. And you don't need to know it all today, but you need to like figure out what you do need to know. And like, but the rest of it, just the willingness to learn will kind of bridge that gap and kind of get you there.
Yes, I agree with that 1000% too. It's, you know, not being afraid to fail, right? And, and you know, really remembering the fact that we're OTs, right? We're experts at modifying, making adaptations and, you know, helping folks kind of develop strategies so that they can still do whatever it is that they need to do, right? So we can certainly apply the same framework for ourselves and for our own, you know, sort of career goals, right?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I just feel like as OTs, like you just get this, like, when you work in a traditional setting for someone, you kind of get like pushed down a lot because you're often at the, like the lowest end of the totem pole, or like, you know, you're always referring to like physicians or just like you're kind of like the, like you're working under the PTs and like you just don't get the same respect. So I feel like after a while that just like starts to wear on you. And like obviously there's some exceptions, like I know some clinics or facilities are better than others that kind of promoting OTs, but like from my experience and like talking to friends and stuff, it's like they don't really have, they're not super valued in their workplace. And so I think after a while that wears on you, but just kind of knowing that even if you're not valued in your current workspace, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be not valued everywhere you go, because you still possess those skills and you're still treating those people and like you're still doing skilled work, even if like day in and day out you don't really feel like it.
And you can certainly seek out an environment where you can feel more valued every day.
Totally.
Right? Because we have those options.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
well, I'm so glad that you did. You took the steps, you took the risk, and, you know, you created this really creative and incredible path for yourself in the technology world and really bridged that with your OT skill set. And now you're doing all of this. So thank you so much for sharing with us your journey and the current work that you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. Like I said, like, I just hope to kind of inspire people who are maybe thinking that they don't have the skills, because you do. And I hope this, like, you know, just makes you kind of rethink like what you can offer.
Absolutely. So Hannah, tell us, how do we find you? How do we follow you? If we had any questions about the type of uncommon work that you do and people were interested in going into this space, how do we reach out to you?
Yeah, I think the best place to find me is on LinkedIn. You guys heard me talk about that just a little bit ago. So yeah, it's my like the my name, it's just at my last name, Q, P-U-G-H, and then H-A-N-N. You can find me on LinkedIn. Or if you just search me, Hannah Q.
Yes, and we'll include that in our show notes for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. So just connect with me and then send me a message.
Thank you.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.